Mormon Stories Podcast is a production of the Open Stories Foundation. This podcast is also available in high-definition video at youtube.com/Mormon Stories.
When I moved here, I got the ward bishop was actually the father of a couple members of the current Young Ambassadors. Not now, but like back then. And he really liked performance and good things like that. And so he really encouraged the ward to do musical performances and things like that. So we put together this whole performance in the summer that I moved here of My Servant Joseph by Kenneth Cope. And I auditioned and got cast as Joseph. Like, this is really cool. This is
Joseph Smith.
Yes. Yes. And the opening number that Joseph Smith sings in that whole performance is Learning for Myself, which Kenneth Cope wrote for the theme for my first EFY that I ever went to. This is so...
Do you remember it?
Oh, yeah.
Can you sing a little bit of it? Is that a bear sheet?
A little bit.
You don't have to.
I actually recorded it, which is kind of fun. I want to, but I feel like I'm like driveways right now. I'm embarrassed. But Learning for Myself was... it was a big deal. It's a beautiful number to me. So a couple months right after I was here, we did this whole stake-wide performance of The Life of Joseph Smith in music. And, it kind of felt like being back on my game a little bit. And that's probably because I wasn't there long enough for people to start wondering yet about my life. And I was involving myself in things that I really like to do, and I had a job, and this was all good. And of course, because she was active and really part of the whole social scene and the church, Heather came to this performance. And so afterwards, I met lots and lots of people. I mean, everyone in the stake is like, oh, good job, whatever. And I met Heather, which I don't remember because I was met like 200 people. So she loves to say, I met him and I fell in love with him first, but he doesn't remember me. Like, to just get under my skin. But she would say flat out, he sang the first song and I was in love. It's done.
So what happened after that performance? How did things grow from there?
It was really just a month later that I met her. I have a really good memory of seeing her. I think I'd seen her in church already, but seeing her one time standing by the baptismal font in the hall in the church during a family home evening time that the whole ward was at, and thinking, she's really cute. And to be honest, I wanted something to work out, so I was still in the arena of how can I make it this work, how can I make this happen, because clearly I need to be married. She was really cute. So in October, I decided to call and ask her out, because I had a friend on a date and said, get a double. And I'd actually had a few people say, you should go with Heather. So anyway, I called and she couldn't go because she was in charge of a huge dinner function at her work. But said, ask me again, which was encouraging to me. And then a couple weeks later, she called and said, I'm free. Do you want to do that date? And so I said, you bet. I happened to be free. It was a Saturday, so I planned up a date and took her out. So we also disagree about who asked who on the first date. Because I asked first, and I planned the date we went on that she asked me. But we... we figured out early on in dating that we cannot compete about anything. We had a competition about finishing and reading Harry Potter, and we sometimes would play games, and we figured out we cannot be on different teams because we were both way too competitive, and it was just did not end well. We really were getting on the same team about everything from the beginning. And I was attracted to her.
Sexually?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, initially, I was really attracted to her because she was beautiful, like, aesthetically beautiful. But But also, she was very smart and very collected. She was already a full-time physical therapist at Children's Hospital, quite happy living her life. She was not, she never had this like, oh, I've got to find a husband and my life is not complete and I'm just not doing what I want to do with my life. She was really happy with what she was doing, that it was all right. And whenever someone came along, then it was going to come along. And that was really attractive to me because I don't like desperation. And as if it wasn't hard enough that I really didn't have an attraction to other girls. But sort of this, it's an ugly stereotype of like this kind of desperate to get married 20-year-old running around the institute going, who will date me? Who will date me? I really need to get married and I just want you to take care of me and all that kind of stuff. So
for you and woman.
Yeah. Yeah. So I really don't care for that. It was really collected. I knew what she was doing with her life and I liked it. Because to me that looked like somebody I could be a partner with and not have to take care of and sort of, you know, be in this kind of a role that I didn't want. A couple weeks into dating, she took me down to meet her family, and on the way back we stopped at a gas station and I kissed her for the first time. And
you really liked it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can remember even a couple specific times early on as we were dating that I realized I'm attracted to you. Not just that you're pretty, but there's essential feelings that you need to have. You have to be aroused when you're with the person that you're going to be with for the rest of your life. Right? You should be, I think. And to be able to experience that with her made me go, hey, okay, maybe this could work. And that made me very, very excited about the possibilities because I really liked her and she was brilliant and smart. And as a person, I was definitely falling for her really quick. And it was probably, I mean, it was only a couple, 2 or 3 months in that I told her, I think I'm in love with you. Which made her very, very happy because it really seems like every step that I took towards her, she was already there waiting. So glad you got here now about in terms of our relationship and closeness together. And she was really, really, she worked for me personally because anytime that I had a bit of a freak out about anything, she was, all right, her common phrase was, well, I'll be here when you're done with that. And that made a big difference to me. Or like I remember one time specifically discussing with her, I'm 27 at the time that we started dating. I'm 27 now, and sometimes I like to be alone and just have some quiet time and go do my own thing. And so what happens when we're married and I just want to be alone? And I kind of don't want to see you because clearly this is going to be a big problem and you're not going to like that and whatever. And, you know, her answer was, go be alone, dummy. I mean, it was just not discouraging, but she was just so, these things are not a problem. It's okay. And she was just very grown up that way. She was 25 at the time. And I think it feels relevant to say that the duality that my life had been of trying to hide this and trying to be this my whole life, but all at the same time with her, something that was so significant is that it started coming together to be the same life. Because I remember when I asked her to marry me was when I realized we were just sitting in a car and it occurred to me with a whole lot of clarity. She knows everything about me. Nobody in my whole life has ever known this much of me and no one has ever loved me more than her. So I have to be with this person. So I asked her to marry me. And she said yes right away and called me the next morning. Did we get engaged? yeah, we did. But also, the reason that that could even happen was, I was just 4 or 5 months into dating, that I kind of had the click in of, all right, I really like her and this is really wonderful, but I cannot deceive her. And I can't lie to her. Well, same thing. I can't lie to her. I can't do this. And for me, when I had that realization, I think I'd known it all along, but when it really came to the surface for me, it was really hard because I thought, this has been so nice and it's been so wonderful and I really love this girl. And in order to really love her and be honest, I have to call it off. Not that I was going to call it off. I had to tell her, which would mean that it was over. So, of course, I fasted. It was on a Sunday, and I fasted through the day. And I remember coming home, and I asked her if she would come over. And sitting on my couch before she came over, I can recall, you know, falling on my knees at the couch and praying and praying and praying. And what gave me the bravery to go ahead and do it is that I had, again, that real spiritual fix. Because when I prayed for help, because I'm going to tell Heather and that now this opportunity is going to be over, I'm so sure. The answer that I felt was, I will love you anyway. So, you know, there's a lot of moments like that that made me feel so like God and Heavenly Father and Jesus were so important, because even though I wasn't enough, they loved me anyway. And so this was this deal for me, and I had her over and sat her on the couch, and it was a couple months earlier that we'd had one of my friends come over and visit me for a little while. Actually, because he was on tour with a Broadway show that was in town, and he and I were in the Young Ambassadors together. Anyway, by that time, he had fully come out and was living his life. And so Heather had met him, and that wasn't a secret anywhere. So my way of telling her was to say, I need to tell you that I'm like Paul. That's because I don't even think I could Paul. Say the word I'm gay. It had to be, you know what I'm talking about. But then I think I did say, I'm same-sex attracted. To which Heather's response was, I know. And I kept waiting for her to have this dramatic reaction she was supposed to have, or to not like that. And she just wouldn't. She just wouldn't. She'd already thought it out, and this was okay. And she was pretty clear about saying, I realize that that's not really supposed to work, but I love you, and I've prayed about it, and it's going to be okay. Which I think in a whole lot of situations is dangerous, but we didn't know about it. We were doing the best that we could, and so we went forward, and I was so, so happy. We had the perfect wedding and this amazing honeymoon to Italy, which was all about her, because she was smart enough that she had owned this condo before in undergrad and then sold it when we were getting married and paid off some student debt and took us on a honeymoon. And I was like, I have a $10 an hour job. I mean, so, but she was amazing that way. We had this incredible start.
Quick question. Had you ever had a relationship with a guy?
Never.
Never?
Never.
Never made out with a guy or?
Not even once. Never ever. And I
no sex with a guy.
No.
So no, you're
a girl.
I was
a good boy.
So you're, but not asexual.
No, I was trying to be for a lot of times, but no.
Right.
I was not asexual.
So isn't it interesting that you're like racked with torment for 27 years of your life for having actually never done anything? And that's
interesting. That's the majority. So sad.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
And that's the majority of the people that I have interviewed who experienced same-sex attraction as a Mormon. They never had any relationship. Mm-hmm. So the whole promiscuous or experimenting, just none of that has applied so far to anyone I've interviewed, I don't think.
Right. And I like you bring that up because I think it's important to this story to note. I thought it's not a very evolved thought. In fact, it's maybe a little embarrassing, but I was doing the best I could at the time. I thought maybe that's why this works. Because I have other friends who did mess around and they can't make it work. So maybe part of the reason why I get to have Heather is because I chose the right. I didn't do something. Because really, you know,
God was rewarding you.
Yeah, despite the fact that we believe in an atonement, I think we kind of don't. And for a great deal of my spiritual life, sometimes that on and off has been a real platform for me. We do not believe in Jesus, not. But I think in Mormonism, I'll own this as my interpretation, that we really have unforgivable sins. And maybe even different from unforgivable, we have sins that will change you in such a way you cannot change back.
The whole chewed bubble gum, the whole nails on the board, you can pull the nail out, but the whole room.
Right, like you can have the blessings sort of eventually, but there are things you will do that once you've done them, you can't go back no matter how much you repent.
Yeah, even like you look at it, you look at pornography, you'll never be able to get that image out of your
mind. You'll never, right.
Right?
Good heavens. Yeah. Yeah. Stuff like that. And so I kind of thought, well, I chose never to do anything. And so surely that's part of why it worked. Because I was trying still to figure out all the time. Why is this working? I want to know. I'm a curious person. I want to understand things. I mean, in that way, the field of counseling psychology really just worked for me because I want to understand things all the time. And so I continued from the moment I was dating her. I already was, and way all the time after we were married, trying to figure out, why does this work? Why does it work for me? It doesn't work for other people.
And your answer was, God blessed you for your righteousness.
In part, yeah. Now, that's what made the best sense to me initially.
Okay, so the people who feel really passionately about Josh Weed and Lolly, for our listeners, Josh is a therapist from Washington State. This is 2012, and recently he came out with a blog post saying that after 10 years of marriage to his wife, he's come out as gay with 3 children, and he says he loves his marriage, he loves his wife. And they say that they have the best sex life of anyone they know, including straight people. And for him, it totally works. Now, he's very careful. What?
It's quite a claim.
Well, he also is careful not to say that this is something everyone should do, not to hold himself up as a role model. And I've even heard him in a personal conversation I had with him, and in some other talks he's given and another YouTube video or two he's put out where he said parents should not use Josh and Lolly's weed story as a battering ram. And if somebody decides that they need to have same-sex relationships, that he doesn't stand in judgment of them. And so just giving the listeners some context. Now, as I've talked to people who feel really passionately about this, their answer is, he's bisexual.
Mm-hmm. And why wouldn't it be?
Right?
Why wouldn't it be? When I saw he did an interview and the interviewer asked him on Nightline, so you're bisexual, and he said no. And my issue with that is that I feel like he has decided to, obviously I cannot speak about him like as though I know him, but my interpretation is he has decided to define what these words mean in his own way. And I think that it's a little problematic to publicly say, no, I'm not bisexual, because the public as a whole has a very accepted general kind of idea what the word bisexual means. And bisexual includes, I like to have sex with men, I like to have sex with women. And But yeah, he's saying that, but I'm not bisexual. So I can only guess that he's chosen to define these words in his own way, but then we didn't get that definition, and so I think that ended up publicly very confusing.
Yeah.
Doesn't make sense.
And it's probably not time to dig into him yet, and I'm the one who brought him up, but you could say, you know, what he says is that I'm only attracted to men, mm-hmm. but I'm attracted to my wife.
Right.
But she's the only woman I ever have been or ever will be attracted to again. Mm-hmm. So it's more that they met as childhood sweethearts, that they grew up together, that they were besties, and eventually decided that this would work for them. And so, okay, so we don't need to dig into that. But for you, so does that mean that by definition, or no, we can't talk about that. Let's just hold that for a second. Okay. But by that logic, you also are bisexual.
Right. That makes sense.
So you're comfortable with that label for yourself?
I'm comfortable. Yeah, but I don't use it. Because going forward, I have no intention or feeling towards finding another wife or being with a woman. So if it's more comfortable to look at my situation and say, this gentleman is bisexual and that's why that works. Okay. But I don't use that word in trying to define myself really because going forward, that's not going to be the case.
Right.
I'm not going to find another woman.
I'll just add this one last thing. In same-sex attracted sort of studies, there's a scale called the Kinsey scale, which goes from 0 to 6. 0 means exclusively attracted to the opposite sex, no attraction to the same sex.
Right.
6 means exclusively attracted to the same sex. And then 3 means half and half bisexual.
Right, really like a genuine bisexual. There's also a measure called X for asexual.
Right, that's right, that's right. And then you could even do the Kinsey scale, not just on attraction, but also on identity mm-hmm. and on behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but you could say someone's a 5, right? And they're still bisexual technically because they're not
right.
fully exclusively same-sex attracted.
Well, I think the general understanding is that it's actually very rare that anyone is a 6 or 0.
I've heard that, except I know my experience and I know other men I've talked to and a lot of people. I know a lot of guys that claim to be 0s, you know.
Of course they do, because that's what you want to be. If you're straight and identify as straight in a world where being gay is disgusting and awful and would mean something horrible for you, you're not a 0, you're a -1, you know. But
no, but I'm not aware of having ever felt same-sex attraction myself.
However, if you broaden the idea of sexuality to mean more than just being involved in intercourse or some kind of naked, you know, involvement together, if you broaden it even just slightly to any sense of emotionality, to any sense of personal connection, to a like any sense of I just need some guy time, I just need some girl time. I feel uplifted by
not just sexual, but
romance or whatever. Yeah. Like if you can broaden sexuality into any sense of these other things, which I think you have to, because that sexuality involves those things. Intimacy is not just a physical act. Then it's really hard to say that anyone anywhere is a 6 or 0, because to say that you have no connection to or no need for anyone who is, you know, opposite or same, wherever you're at. It's hard to believe that.
So for you, the sexual thing, everything is somewhat sexual, are you saying, in relationships of intimacy? Because, like, you can, like, really care for somebody, really want to be with them.
But not want to be physically intimate.
Have no arousal.
Right. Right, right.
No desire to hug, you know, maybe a goodbye hug, but.
Now, I think what I'm really starting to do is to take away the black and whiteness of it. That's what I would hope, because it's not. Growing up, and especially, again, this is my interpretation of Mormonism, but the lessons I was giving all over is it's really black and white. That it's that simple.
Right.
Sex is absolutely black and white. It's wrong until it's right. And then when it's right, it's only right in this particular context and with particular things that you do. And so under that guise, it's completely separate from, it's wonderful and beautiful in marriage, but really not even necessary. It's just a nice perk and it's necessary for procreation. And I did get different messages growing up from different areas in the church about some, you know, sometimes, no, it's really beautiful and important for couples, you know, in opposition to, well, it's really, it's fine and it's good and it's good for procreation, but right. It's definitely not necessary.
Right.
When it doesn't happen, it's fine. And I think that it's that kind of sex doesn't really matter for intimacy position that makes it all the easier to hold a religious idea that you can be married as a gay man to someone else, because if you don't have an active, fulfilling, so to speak, sex life, so what? That's not part of righteousness and the plan of salvation that's necessary. So buck it up, shut up, pull it together, be righteous. So yeah, I guess coming back to, I view it, sexuality as something that is so fluid in human beings that people are really, really individually different from one another in a lot of ways. So the Kinsey scale is really good. There's actually more detailed, lots of more detailed scales measuring sexual orientation out there. This is just the best known one.
Right.
So I think it's best to work with that. But coming back to the personal, like I really think if you want to just easily sit on top of numbers for the sake of not trying to nuance till the end of the day, I was really like a 4. And Heather made me a 2. But nobody else. Nobody else.
That you've ever met since?
Never before, never after. It was very, very individual. I think that that's for several reasons. Because first of all, I want to say really, really, really clearly, saying that, like if you were just to take that quote and stop it there, it's too easy to take that and say, oh, well, then all you need to do is find the right. One magic person that will pull you from your place to there.
Be righteous.
Yeah.
Live the plan.
And you'll find that. Yes.
And Lolly or Heather
will show
will
up.
Appear.
Right. No.
Well, what do you mean no?
It doesn't happen for other people. That's not statistically valid. It doesn't. It's not okay to not live your whole life waiting for something that you don't know exists. Because you don't. There is no promise of that anywhere. Even scripturally or conference talks that I know of, nowhere does it say if you wait righteously for long enough and do the stuff that you're supposed to do for long enough, you will be given your one special person as a gay individual that will pull you just across the line on the Kinsey scale so that you can be happy with them sexually. That's not promised anywhere, and to expect it is inappropriate.
So you were happy with Heather sexually?
Yes, I was. But I think it's important to know, like, so here's this short list of stuff that I think that matters. It is not exhaustive. I am sure that there are so many factors as to why Heather worked so well for me and I was so happy with her. But I can identify some that I think are particularly important, like big pieces of the puzzle. And one of them has to do with the Kinsey scale. First of all, I think I'm about like a 4. And Heather makes me a 2, like I said. But so by that just simple math definition means that just by that aspect alone, I'm more capable of getting somehow closer to a 3 than a 5 is, which means that individually there's something in me that was capably close to that already. Individually. Why is that? I do not know.
So if you had been a 6,
No.
It would have been a bad...
If I was a six, I wouldn't have even tried.
Right.
Well, I shouldn't say that. I'm sorry. I'm sure there are plenty of people that would identify as a six that definitely would try. But, you know, so there's that. Whatever reason, something in me that is closer to bisexual, that not everybody is. So to say that everybody can just do this. So that, again, just one aspect that made it possible.
And my understanding is that men with same-sex attraction, at least the ones in the studies I've seen, tend to cluster more towards the extremes.
Yeah.
Women can tend to be a little bit more fluid. Mm-hmm. Men, you know, it's not like everyone clusters around three.
Right. No. And this is where, again, I want to be really careful with this about talking about culture, because there's such a stance out there about that you can learn your sexuality, or that it's something that culture teaches you. And I am not going to get on board with that, because I don't believe that. But to balance that, and I don't want either of these to be louder per se, because I think they're both important. But in addition to the fact that you're born, I really maintain you're born with your sexual identity. There is a lot that you learn, a lot, in terms especially of emotional connection and what soothes you. I mean, as you develop attachments growing up, even as an infant, there are particular things that soothe you that I think play into what we want to fill our life with and what makes us happy and joyful through our life. And in our culture, women are allowed to be more emotionally intimate. They are allowed to be closer without ridicule. And so I do think that there's an element of fluidity for women in general. I do not want to talk about individuals, but in general, they're more allowed to do that. And hence they can develop a greater sense of the fluidity of sexuality and intimacy and closeness that men in general cannot, because they're not allowed.
Right.
In our culture. So again, sexuality not learned, but can you learn some wiggle room? Yes.
Especially if you're female.
Right. And so technically then you could learn it as a male too. It's just not going to be easy in our culture. But so is there some part that's learned? Of course there is. Is it all learned? No. And to say that you can unlearn your sexuality is inappropriate, because it's only just a portion of your whole sexuality that you have probably learned and developed.
Right.
And I think anybody who has an active sex life can actually also attest to, you learn to love and like things that you didn't before, even as you develop and grow with your partner. And so it learning happens.
It's so just, were you nervous like on the wedding night? Like, am I going to be able to perform, or is this going to work? Like,
you know, I wasn't.
You just knew, because you knew you were attracted before.
Right.
So you knew it was
I wasn't. And because we talked about it.
Right.
We talked about it. So that, like, here's my, you know, down my things that I think actually matter that made it work. There's the Kinsey School, where I was personally at,
before.
Which cannot be where other people are at.
Right.
Also, we talked about stuff. I like communication. I believe in communication. And for heaven's sake, the week after we got home from our honeymoon, I started grad school to be a couple and family therapist. So I was taking class every day and like being inundated with how to communicate and coming home and talking about how to communicate. And she's an incredible communicator. So we're talking about stuff all the time, really openly and with great depth. And because she was amazing that way, and I was learning how to do it, I do really believe that the amount of constant communication, starting with my telling her that I'm gay, which Josh Wee talks about his experience with that too, played into our relationship staying okay. Let's balance it. Does that mean that if you are in a mixed orientation marriage and you talk about it every day and you learn to be really good communicators, you can stay together? No, it does not. But I do think it was a part of us staying together that was vital and really important, and kind of a part where some heterosexual couples can not communicate but stay together anyway. And I think it's a little harder for a mixed orientation marriage to never talk and then really stay together the whole time.
Right. Yeah, because the things you were talking about very early on, being a good listener, being empathetic, liking to talk about feelings. Mm-hmm. I could even hear some advocates for mixed orientation marriages saying, hey, women, you're going to be lucky. You're in for a lot of emotional intimacy.
Right, right. If...
And men.
If they are and if he is. I mean, let's come back to part of this is the individual. I'm talking about me as an individual. But Heather, who I can't say enough about how... I can't say enough about how amazing she is because I love her. She wanted that communication because of who she is and where she was at in life. When she found out that I'm gay, that was not disturbing to her. It wasn't threatening to her. And I don't want to disparage anybody, any other woman or man married to a lesbian who feels threatened by their partner's homosexuality. But I will say that Heather was not threatened by it, and that was a really big, helpful deal. She could talk about it because it didn't scare her. And so, again, I'm not trying to say that this as a solution, like stop being scared of it, and then you can make a mixed orientation marriage work. But I do think it mattered that she was confident and not scared of me. And
how does a woman not be terrified? Was there something about she had a tough upbringing? Was she just, well, what was it about her upbringing or personality that would make a 25-year-old woman go, yeah, I knew, no big deal, let's do this, instead of like, oh my gosh,
right.
I'm terrified that I might be making the biggest mistake of my life. And do you have any sense for...
Well, my answer to that is not great, but I would lead into it by saying I can remember one time, and I was like halfway into our years being married, that I was listening to Mormon Stories where you interviewed Emily Pearson.
Yeah.
Who is clearly amazing. I never met her, but I love her from listening to her. And she was making such valid, gorgeous points about, you know, that I am sad to say, had not previously really, really thought about. But she's talking about what it does to a woman to be married to a gay man who cannot ravage her, and how this is not okay. It's not fair. And so I was really like, oh my gosh, Heather's life is completely subpar. It's not. Oh, the person who I love the most on the planet is suffering, and she's not well because she doesn't have the relationship she really should have. I mean, I had thought about that before. Let me be honest. I had thought about that before, but not to this level. So I ran home and was like, Heather, you're clearly disturbed and you have problems because you think this is, that you're not worth more than me. And first of all, it's not wise to go to your partner and tell them who they are.
Right.
Oh, she was mad. She was really mad at me because I, in so doing, in trying to be considerate of her and how she had sold herself short, she was like, what, you're treating me as though I don't know what I'm doing, as though I am stupid. I knew exactly what I'm doing. Maybe not exactly, but I knew what I was getting into, and I loved you, and I knew you loved me. So, you know, she shut that down immediately. I don't want to say that someone else should have to be in the place of being able to shut that down to make their marriage work. But the real answer, how does someone get to that place? How does someone that, it's that nasty little word, magic. Because she was who she was. That it was just her that she was confident and wonderful. And, even talking to her parents, they'll say, She just came out that way. Hmm. She was okay with her own sense of self and was confident that we were okay, and we checked in on us being okay all the time. So my best answer is magic. It's just, it's who she was.
Were there other parts of that list? So it was who you were, who she was?
Who? Yeah. And magic's part of the list.
Magic.
Like, let's go ahead and go there now since the word is out there. There is an element, and I think this is the element that people want to get a grasp on, and I cannot speak for the universe because I am not the universe, but if you want me to bet all my socks on it, you will never figure this out. The magic cannot be figured out. Why did it work? There is some percentage of why it worked that you will never know. You will never understand because it just did. Why do you love who you love? You can break it down a whole lot, but you will always end up with something at the end that, because they're them. So some element or some big element of it is magic. It can't be replicated. I can't explain it. And it needs, I think, to be really said and really clear that there is an element of a mixed orientation marriage that is working and where people are happy. You cannot deconstruct. It doesn't make sense. And all I can do is apologize that it doesn't make sense, but there it is.
Okay. I'm going to come back to that point, but sure. I don't want to get you off. Any other points on the list?
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's go through them and then I'll come back to them.
Well, I have only two more things that I think are relevant. And again, they're not, it's not an exhaustive list. It's just things that have really stuck out to me as I've really thought about it. One of them is a connection. And I want to speak about this specifically personally. I just know that personally, this mattered for our relationship, that we connected to one another emotionally as well as sexually very, very frequently. Very frequently. There was never, ever a day in our whole marriage that I didn't talk to her. Ever. One time early on in marriage, she went for her job to a camp thing and was gone for 2 nights. That is the longest I've ever been away from her before she died.
Well,
we texted, we called, and I really did, we weren't all over on top of each other, but had some kind of connection with each other. And if we hadn't connected to the point of feeling like, hey, I'm with you, I see you, in, somewhere in 12 or 24 hours, one or both of us started going, what's going on? So I think that mattered, that we were constantly connecting such that some kind of drift apart was really never tolerated.
But was that born partly out of a paranoia that you might go do something inappropriate and she wanted to keep her eye on you?
Oh, that's so fair to ask, but I don't think so. I don't think so. I can see that happening for a lot of people. But no. Because it was happening in and around all the time when I hadn't done something wrong.
So right. It was just connection. Right.
Yeah.
Breathe.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that matters. And then finally, what I don't see discussed much in places is the actual sexual connection that happens in mixed orientation marriages. And so, we're going to talk about sex for a second and try to be very, very appropriate about it. But it's relevant. It matters. First of all, here's my bias. Here's where I come from. Being this idea that sex doesn't matter and that it's just kind of periphery and maybe a little bit fun on the side or, any number of this way of describing that it's not, that it's nice and it's fun and it procreates, but it's not really important, I reject. I am coming at this point and I approach my life and my beliefs are, it is not irrelevant that we are sexual beings and that it is relevant and important and vital that we connect with each other sexually to some degree and that we become sexually fulfilled. It's really important to our whole human experience. And now, can I now explain and talk about all forms of asexuality or anything relevant? No, I cannot. I just think there's a way for each person to explore and express and understand their own sense of how they are a sexual being. And that matters. It is not just dessert. It's part of the nourishing, important part of a human being. Okay, so that's where I'm coming at this. But I think that it's important to note about mixed orientation marriages that some can work a little bit better than others. Again, I'm getting so many caveats here, but this is just a portion of why some seem to work better than others and why I think. I have no stats on this. Because gay people, especially gay men, I can't speak as well to lesbians, but gay men come in quite a variety. What gay men desire sexually runs on a range. And some men desire to have one particular thing where others desire this. I'm kind of thinking on, again, trying to be very clear but not too explicit, on a give and receive basis. Some men desire to receive and some desire to give. And some really land in the middle about liking both activities sexually. And I say like, but I don't even want to rest on like. That's what, for sexual fulfillment, they crave and what they need.
So if, and I'm going to be just a little bit explicit. So if you happen to be a gay man that's more into giving than receiving, then you might be a little bit more, the conditions might be such that you're a little bit more well-suited for a mixed orientation marriage if the other things also are there.
Right. To be technical, I don't know how technical it is, but if you're going to get into the world of discussing this with anybody, there are actual terms for it. So a giver in the sexual world is called a top, and the receivers are called bottoms, and then a versatile is in the middle somewhere. And then, to be honest, there's other realms of desire and what they really like, which, let's be honest, also exists in the heterosexual world. What men and women really prefer to do in the privacy of their own relationship, or without privacy, I guess there's a whole realm. But but what people choose to do, what's really fulfilling for them and really connecting to them, is very individual. But yes, exactly what you're getting at. Somebody who is referred to as a top in the gay world, or who identifies themselves as that, meaning that they have particular sexual predilections that will work with having intercourse with a woman, there can be fulfillment there. Maybe not full fulfillment, okay? But there can be. To a level that I think it can contribute to a mixed orientation marriage working better for some than others. If you are married to someone who cannot or will not give you what you sexually crave at all, like in any way, you're gonna have a problem. It's gonna create friction and it's gonna be destructive to your intimacy. So
is it a bottom is the opposite of a top?
Yes.
So if a bottom marries a woman, they might be in trouble.
They might be in trouble. Now, I think that men, especially young men, since Mormon men tend to get married young, it also can be confusing for people about mixed orientation marriages, because you look at them and they're very unfulfilled and they're so unhappy and they get divorced and I'm gay and I couldn't be part of this, and the outside can look at it and say, but you have children, you're clearly not gay. You've been having sex with your wife. But I think that's also, it's important to note the fluidity of sexuality, and it's important to note, especially for young men, you can have sex. A lot of people can have sex even if it's not the sex they want, because
you get two bodies rubbing up against each other, and you're 23.
And
there's going to be something.
There you go. It's not impossible.
I mean, if masturbation works, then
so can heterosexual sex. Even if it's not fulfilling, happy making, and in the end, even if you can technically have sex as in intercourse, even though sex, I think, involves so many other things, if you can technically have intercourse, does not mean that you're having a fulfilling sex life by any means. May I refer you to Jennifer Finneson Fife's podcast and the realities of needing wonderful sexual fulfillment in your
quick question. The thing that everyone mentions about Josh Weed is, you know, is he thinking about a man while he's with Lolly? You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
That's kind of the question that people ask. Was that a requirement for you?
No.
So you weren't thinking of other men?
No, but remember, individually, I can only say that about me. I have met and talked to other men who have said, yes, that's a requirement.
A requirement?
For them to have sex with their wife.
They have to
fantasize other men. And I have talked to lesbian women who have to essentially get the same place in their mind about where things are at and really not be with. And to me, that's just, it's tragedy. It's tragedy to think of two people sharing in a completely intimate act where they are mentally, almost spiritually,
elsewhere.
Somewhere else. Habitually. I mean, okay, sometimes, sure, whatever. But habitually, I have to not be with you while I'm with you. That's so sad. That's so sad. I think that that actually played into really helping Heather and I, because I love being with her. Being with her. And I was sexually attracted to her. And I was close enough on the Kinsey scale that she pulled me over. And we were communicating all the time. And then magic. The piece that you cannot explain. But I think it's important to note these other things, because they're at least what I can offer to anybody wondering about it. That these things, none of them is the bullseye, but they all, I think, matter as to whether it can and cannot work. And finally, the last one that is kind of super massively vital, like this one I think you cannot do without, is the expectation. Lots of stuff in life works because you need it to. I think that it's easy to take this element of my marriage worked because I needed it to, because there was no other option but to have a wife and children, is very dismissive of the beauty of a relationship. And so I don't want to do that. In fact, all of this, it's almost a little hard to say all of this without wanting to know that I can't stand the idea of disparaging my relationship with Heather. I can't stand it. I can't abide it. I won't tolerate it from anyone. I guess I can't change anybody else's mind, but it's not okay to me to have that disparaged in any way, because I loved her completely and fully. But to say that expectation wasn't part of us getting together would be a lie. It's a part of straight people getting together. You are expected to get married. In our religious beliefs as Mormons, you can't even attain celestial kingdom unless you get married. Your whole purpose, your eternal purpose, is to procreate and to have those children forever with you. And if you're going to go back to the old doctrines, which we don't know about anymore, but the whole point is that you do that forever and you have this, I mean, it's a family connection forever and ever. That's the plan of salvation, and you cannot progress, move forward, have anything unless you do that. So yes, a mixed orientation marriage, I can especially say in the Mormon Church, is about doing what you have to do, what you need to do, what if you don't do, the world around you will look at you with disdain. I'm glad that that's kind of changing a little bit these days, but that was my experience. That's most, you know, our generation, a lot of them younger still, all of their growing up experience. You have to do this. Expectation plays a large part in why mixed orientation marriages happen and why they stay together. if you don't expect it, then it's not going to happen. Now, can I say that across the board 100%? No. There's probably like 1% of 1% or something that, yes, people will, there will still be individuals of mixed orientation who will fall in love with somebody of the opposite sex because these or whatever other things are all in place and all the magic is in place and all the stars are lined up and they'll still get married. It'll be so, 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 so rare. If we don't expect people to get married, they won't. And we shouldn't. We shouldn't.
We shouldn't.
Expect them to. I realize that now we're into the area of like going against the plan of salvation as it stands. And I'll own that. That's exactly what I'm doing. As it stands. Maybe, hopefully, cross my fingers, it can change for the Mormon perspective about what the plan of salvation involves and is. But here's my position. We should not expect or ask gay people, men or women, to get married to the opposite sex. Period. I will be grateful to the day I die that I married Heather. I am not sorry. I want her back. I would not change it. I would have her. I would be with her. I love her. I wouldn't change it. But we should never, ever ask anybody else to do that. What if I wasn't expected to get married? Would I have ever had her? I mean, maybe that's saying, if we don't expect people, then they can't have what I have.
That's what I'm wondering.
You can what if all the way home. What if? To me, it's like this. This is a crude example because it doesn't, like this analogy doesn't work perfectly. But I think anyway, it'll make my point. I think it's like if I hand you a button. And though I don't know the right stats, I'm just going to pull numbers out of the air. So let's say I'm going to hand you a button to push. If you push this button, there is a 1 in, I don't know what, let's say 1 in 10,000 chance, maybe more, maybe less, but let's go with 10,000, that you will get $1 million. Okay? There is a 9,999 chances, if you push this button, that you will be shocked till you die. And the person you love just might be electrocuted till they die too. So, how about let's push that button. You want to get $1 million? You willing to push that button? We're making people push the button. Thank everything I know that I pushed the button and I got $1 million. I did. My greatest sorrow for the entire world around me is that they don't have her. Because I think she's the best human being that ever lived. But I got $1 million. So how many people do you want to say 1 in 10,000 chance that you'll get $1 million. Otherwise, you will be electrocuted to death. Okay, again, it's not a comparison. The words land perfectly. There's so many places that it falls apart. But I think it makes my point. It's so, so, so possible that you will destroy people that it's not worth it. And if we simply remove the expectation and let people be whoever they are, without expectation, and let them find joy and love with people that they truly love, same sex or not, then people will end up happy and they can have great relationships like Heather or I did, whether they are same sex or not. Because I think the point is a beautiful, loving, fulfilling, connected relationship that brings you joy, that helps you evolve and grow and gives you a sense of being home and having family. All these things that I could use to describe the wonderfulness have a really good relationship, that's what we should expect people to find. That. If we expect people to find that, that's possible. If we say, no matter where it is, you know, and as long, obviously you have to have parameters about, it can't be something that's hurting someone. So I'm not trying to just dive all the way down the rabbit hole, but if our expectation is goodness and happiness for people rather than someone of the opposite sex, then people can be free to find that goodness instead of destroying things.
So let me try and explore a hypothetical or at least the implications of what you're saying. Tell me if you are on board with this. So if there's a gay man who finds himself not a six, but maybe a four, mm-hmm. who doesn't spend his whole life waiting, you know, postponing living, postponing potential meaningful same-sex relationships, but happens to find someone with whom there is the magic and there is the connection and there is a sexual arousal and she's attracted to him and he is genuinely attracted to her. If there's a young man that does hit that lottery, you wouldn't tell that man not to push that button if all those factors are aligned, right?
Well, let's acknowledge in the scenario that I don't have all the factors. So there's surely more. Also, to say in that scenario that all the things that I'm talking about, I don't know that you really can explore under the current LDS expectations and norms. I don't know that you really can discover for yourself what your sexual predilections are. So you can't bring that to the table.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So if you're a top,
right,
you won't be, but you're living the law of chastity,
right?
You won't be able to know that.
Now, I do think you have a sense. Like, people have some sense for what they're going to enjoy or like sexually, especially if they've chosen to engage in any masturbation.
Or pornography viewing.
But if you have not, like you're not supposed to, then you...
And the really good boys won't, right?
No, right. So you may not know. Can you be sure that you want to continue connecting to somebody? You can't be sure. And I didn't even talk about the woman's part of experience. Both, I think this probably applies for lesbians, though I obviously cannot speak as well for that. But for a woman in a mixed orientation marriage to a gay man, there's quite a bit about women's sexuality that is very beautifully complex. Beautifully complex. But as a gay man, what's going to work better is if women can be pleased by what a gay man has to offer that pleases him. I think that's true for any couples, but you know, I'm just trying to say there's an element and an aspect of the whole women's sexual experience as well as a straight woman and what works for her. So will she know that ahead of time if she's a good woman girl under the current expectations? Probably not. And so there's just a whole lot of aspects of the scenario that you're painting that I think it's still danger, Will Rogers. You know, like, it's still dangerous. But if two people get together and they think, I really want to do this, but it's not because I have to, it really isn't because the church or Heavenly Father or my family or their culture has said that I have to, if that's really gone and they're trying to do their best, I say, by all means, push the button. You have changed. If you've eliminated expectations, you've done the best to educate yourself about the realities and the possibilities, then push the button by all means. Because the truth is, even straight people, when they are getting married, are pushing the button. Getting married is pushing the button. How much the odds are that it's might implode your life are different for everybody, depending on how well they've prepared and how close they are and a million other things. But do I think no one should try? No, that's not my right to say. But again, I come back to whatever odds they are, because I don't know what the odds are, but I just think if you don't have to, if you really don't, from the God of the universe, have to, and let's be clear, let me be clear, I do not believe the God of the universe expects people to get married to the opposite sex. And like that whole, I don't believe that.
And the church actually does not recommend it as a way to deal with the result of same-sex marriage.
Not as a way to deal with it. So thank you, church, for switching that. But it's not enough of a position switch. If the expectation is gone, I don't think people in general would even need to attempt. But if they do, great. Try. If you are in love with somebody and you think it's working for you and you've educated yourself to the best, there is no promise out there that you are going to be able to keep your marriage together for anything. Everything has problems. But And I like your question because I feel like it's balancing out. Should we tell everybody? Absolutely no, no way, never, ever, ever, ever. No, because there are some people who all the stars align and it feels right for them. And you know what? It's their life. And if they're both really educated and they know what they're doing, then maybe it'll be okay. So I like balancing that with that, but should it happen?
What I hear you saying is that in addition to the items you listed about you and Heather, there was an element of luck.
Absolutely.
Like maybe it's really significant.
Oh yeah.
Because some of those things,
I love the unicorn phrase.
Yeah. So to some degree, there were things you didn't even know were important to you until after.
Yeah.
You entered into
Wow, we got lucky.
Yeah.
We really did.
And so it's kind of like lots of metaphors, button, Russian roulette.
Yeah.
The question is how many bullets are in the chamber and do you really want to...
Anybody really know, but...
Yeah. You're saying be very, very careful.
Yeah. And I'm...
And you're not a role model. You're doing a Charles Barkley. I'm not a role model.
I am not a role model. I got lucky. I'm very grateful. You know what? I would love to be a role model. No, I don't want to say I want to be a role model about anything because that's pretentious and pompous, and I don't go that bad. To finish what I was saying anyway, if anybody was to look to me and Heather and I about our relationship and the way things should be, then I'm sorry, I get pretty emotional about stuff. I would wish for people that they could love who they were with as much as I adored her and as much as I really felt loved by her. No matter what the orientation is or how your marriage is, I just wish for people that they would feel so loved for their whole self. That's what I wish for people. Do not, I won't be an example for you should do this. Because I kind of think, if you need to, then do it. It's your life. But odds are, don't do it. Eliminate all expectation that it should happen. And I think pretty much people won't do it. They'll be free to get what they want. Which is for most gay people in a same-sex relationship and most bisexual people. What are they, Jews? So, yeah. Am I saying that well enough?